Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. So not only are the Obamas heading to Martha's Vineyard for the weekend, so is the award-winning writer Ann Patchett. She and maybe the Obamas will be at the Martha's Vineyard Book Festival. Ann Patchett's most recent book, Commonwealth, is now out in paperback. It is the story of a family, of two families, of a mixed family, of the strange and evolving relationships between step-siblings and divorced spouses and parents and children. And it follows the way two families break apart and how they come together as a whole other kind of entity. Joining me now from Nashville, Tennessee, is Ann Patchett, Commonwealth, her latest book again. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
I had no idea the Obamas were going to be in Martha's Vineyard this weekend.
Well, I've arranged
I'm just sitting
for you
here
to have lunch with, you know, any of the foursome, if you'd like, or the whole foursome. No, I have no
That's
control
really
over that.
Really kind of you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, really, I'm glad that we could let you know this. No, it's big news. It's big news for state police. It's big news for the island. It's big news for the for that wonderful little game room in one of the neighborhoods, because that's where the kids used to go. And my kids saw them.
And
there,
it's big news. It's big news for me. Come on.
I hope they come to see you, especially.
Can you imagine?
It's a beautiful book that you've written, and Patchett, I know it's one of several novels, and there are some things that you've repeated that have been linchpins or launch pads for the, how the stories fall out. And in this case, the case of Commonwealth, it's a kiss. It's an illicit kiss. And it happens between a man and a woman who are not married, and their families are all around them. You follow the Keatings and the cousin families over 50 years. Could you start us off with a reading of that kiss?
Sure.
This is not a spoiler alert. This begins,
no.
You know, the begin. It sets us all in motion. So just to let me...
It's kind of a book without spoiler alerts, so
oh,
I think
that's
we're going
to
be safe. Yeah.
So Bert Cousins, okay, he is... You want to lay this out, or you want me to give a little
sure,
tease?
Sure, I can do it. This is... Fix Conroy has a new baby. He is a police officer in Los Angeles. It's the early 1960s. They're having a big christening party. Somebody from the DA's office has crashed the party because he wants to get away from his family, and they kiss. Everybody's drunk, as people so often are at christening parties on Sunday mornings, and he has a crush on the wife, and here we go. He put his arm around her back, pressed his fingers into the straight line of her zipper. It was the magic of gin and orange juice. The baby balanced between the two of them, and he kissed her. That was the way this day was turning out. He closed his eyes and kissed her until the spark he had felt in his fingers when he touched her hand in the kitchen ran the entire shivering length of his spine. She put her other hand against the small of his back while the tip of her tongue crossed between his parted teeth. There was an almost imperceptible shift between them. He felt it, but she stepped back. He was holding the baby. The baby cried for a second, a single red-faced wail, and then issued a small hiccup and pressed into Cousin's chest.
That's quite an early scene in a beautifully written piece. And this was in the nursery, is that correct?
Great.
Okay.
Great.
In brief, what happens then? Is there an immediate shift in family life? Does this become known?
No, it actually takes a while. And the thing about this book is every moment is not covered. So the next time we see the two of them, they are married and living on the other side of the country with six children because he has four and she has two. So we don't play out every second of the relationship.
I do have to ask something that I couldn't figure out. Bert shows up, another member of the district attorney's office is there. How does he find out? This is another of those things that's not covered. How did he know there was a christening that changed everything?
Oh, actually, it is covered.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It is covered. You were skimming.
There's
a moment where Fix, the cop, the father, is talking to the other district attorney, and he says, you know, we'll see you on Sunday. And then Bert Cousins walks down and says, what's going on Sunday? And the district attorney says, oh, he's having a christening party. And Bert says, first kid? And he says, no, it's his second kid. But, you know, those Catholics, they can't get enough of those parties. So that's how he knows.
Let me just quote this. I'm not even reading. Two girls, what are you going to do?
That's right.
Listen, I'm
exactly.
not I, that one.
Two
stuck,
daughters.
Two
so
daughters.
Sorry.
Right. Sorry. Sorry. Stuck in my memory. But it is that moment. That moment that changes everything for these families. And as you say, you jump into these people's lives down the road. This is a family where children are often left to their own devices in this mixed family. Parents make themselves the priority, which is interesting. And it's a different era. It's not taking place in 2017.
Right.
Can you talk about the relationships? We didn't want to bring up too many names because we didn't want to make people think they had to have a family tree in front of them. But
exactly.
There are step-parents, siblings, former spouses. The primary players here, it's the couple who has all those children on that vacation with them.
Yeah, I mean, I say this is a book with 11 main characters. So there are four parents, right? Because they're two different couples and they each lose a spouse and marry each other. And there are six kids. And then later on in the book, there is one novelist. So there are 11 main characters. It's over 50 years and it takes place in many states. I want to say something, though, about what you just said about, you know, the parents aren't really looking after the children. It was so interesting to me when I was out on book tour. People were very upset. They thought the parents were so neglectful. They were just terrible. But I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. I'm 53. And that's just the way everybody's family was. You'd put the kids outside in the morning, and if they came home at night, you know, it was a good day, and that was it.
It's very true, having grown up in Brown within 2 years of you, older than I am. It's a very different time. There is another time in the book. Beverly is now married to Bert. Beverly and Bert,
right,
the two who were kissing in the beginning. And she is raising Bert's children and her own children during the summer. And this is Jeanette and Albie, her stepchildren, and Carolyn and Franny, who we really begin to follow later on, her own children. There's a segment that would be really helpful for listeners, I think, to catch up with all of us. If you could read for us, it's on page 75.
Sure, got
yeah.
it. You know, it's so disastrous when all the kids come in together because they're miserable for their own reasons. They each miss the parent who's not there. So Franny was in the living room pulling the cat's front legs through the armholes of a doll's dress and crying so quietly, her mother was sure that every single thing she had ever done in her life up until that moment was a mistake. There was no place to go, no place to get away from them, not even the linen closet, because Jeanette hadn't come out of the linen closet since surrendering the cat. Beverly took the car keys and went outside. The minute she closed the door behind her, she was underwater, the summer air hot and solid in her lungs. She thought about the back patio of the house in Downey, how she would sit outside in the afternoons, Caroline on her bicycle, Franny happy in her lap, the smell of orange blossoms nearly overwhelming. Fix had to sell the house in order to pay her half of what little equity they had had and make some child support. Why had she made him sell the house? No one could sit outside in Virginia. She got five new mosquito bites just walking to the driveway, and each one puffed up to the size of a quarter. Beverly was allergic to mosquito bites. It was easily 105 degrees in the car. She started the engine, turned on the air conditioner, turned off the radio. She lay across the scorching green vinyl of the bench seat so that no one looking out the front window of the house could see her. She thought about the fact that if she were in the garage rather than in the carport, she'd be killing herself now.
Wow. How old is Franny in this at that point?
I'm going to guess she's probably around 8.
You know, we know that your parents are divorced. You spoke about that on NPR and in various other interviews. Your parents were divorced, excuse me. How much of this is at all based on your own family? And this is... These are very real characters. I know these people. I know them in their different generations. You know, we all might know these people. But what of this is you?
A lot of it. My mother said it best when she read the book. She said, none of it happened and all of it's true. And I think that's about right. The things that happened to these people didn't happen to us, but the emotional content was very similar. The action wasn't similar. But my parents did get divorced, and my mother and father had two girls, and my mother married someone with two boys and two girls, and we moved to the other side of the country, and we were a big, sprawling, messy, extended family who loved each other and formed alliances and did our best. So, you know, again, I'm definitely tapping on my own life more than I ever have in other books. But that's not to say that if you read the book, that's what happened to us.
So you are telling the story of a fictitious family and elements of your own family. And I'm thinking about, you know, how, you know, we hear our younger family members talk about instances and experiences, and they don't get it the way I want them to remember it. Right. So, you know, when my niece will retell something, I'm thinking that's not the way it happened.
Yes.
Or when my own daughter now is capturing these moments. So who owns the story? Who gets to tell this? Franny ends up growing up, and she marries a famous writer.
She just has an affair with him.
She's dating him. She has an affair with him. And what did he do with her life story?
Well, she tells him about her life the way we tell people about our lives when we fall in love with them. And he is a famous author who hasn't written a book or had a good idea in a long, long time. And he wants to write a book very loosely based on her family. And she's incredibly flattered. And then it seems disastrous once it comes out. So this was really me kind of playing out different scenarios in my own fear. I talked to the people in my family. Hey, what if I wrote a book that's very loosely based on us? And they all said, yeah, fine, do whatever you want. You know, my family's very supportive, and they were terrific about it. But the fact that the family in the book is horrified was me playing out my fears of what if this worked out a different way? And who does own a story? You know, and that's what I said to my family. I said, I've never written about us or anything based on us. My books are all set in Peru and in science museums and far, far away. But I said, in not writing about your life, I don't have any access to my own life because there's overlap. And at this point in my career, I want to own every bit of my own brain. I don't want to think, oh, I can't go there for fear I might be stepping on some part of your childhood. Your childhood is my childhood. And everybody seemed to understand that. So
who owns the story?
Maybe right. We just share it.
I've read your nonfiction. I read your book about Lucy Greeley, and it's never left me. I have to tell you that.
Thanks.
It was a powerful story about friendship, and that's why it never left me, about relationships, which you do a beautiful justice to. But that also became it became controversy on who owned that story. Her family was not pleased with how you owned the story. That happens.
It does happen, and if we had a couple hours on live radio, I could walk you through that. But
no, I'm not asking for the. Yeah, I mean, just that whole sense of it's your perspective. It was your story. That was your story with her.
That's
your friendship.
That's right.
Well,
just gotta be brave. That's all.
Okay, quick moment. If Michelle Obama runs into you this weekend and she says, "Oh, I hear you own a bookstore. What could you recommend for me? What could I read this summer besides your books, Ann Patchett?"
Read this summer the new Tom Perrotta book that is out just this week.
He was just on the show yesterday. Okay.
Oh, was he? Mrs. Fletcher. It is dirty and harsh, and I loved it. I am sitting here right this minute reading a book by Andrew Sean Greer called Less, which is hysterical, and I want something that makes me laugh. So you've also got to read the David Sedaris Theft by Finding.
Awesome. We have to cut you off, though. And thank you so much.
I know I can do this all day.
We look forward to hearing how Saturday goes at the Martha's Vineyard Book Festival. Ann Patchett joins us today. This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman.